Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, hello everybody and welcome back to the Two Norris podcast. I'm your host James Ennell, joined by my good friend Timmy Long.
Hi everyone.
And my wife Gillian is on the deck. Say hi Gillian.
Hi everyone.
And we have huge honour today. We welcome Ardvora Corky on the podcast, the Lord Mayor of Cork City, Mr. Colm Kelleher.
How are you doing, James? Timmy?
How are you, James?
All things?
Huge honour to have the Lord Mayor come up to Churchfield. I know you're a busy man.
Yeah.
And it's great to have you up here, and thanks a million for coming
up. Not at all.
It's when I seen the car pulling in there with the course. I never realised it was so big. And the parking around here is bad enough. Trust me, now there'd be nearly murders over the parking up around these places over. There's
I
just
have
no
a good pilot in Finbar anyway.
Yeah.
As well.
Fair play to him. Yeah. Fair play.
But what's it like being the Lord Mayor? Like the practicalities, the day to day of it.
It's surreal. I was elected on the 18th of June, just passed, and speaking to previous Lord Mayors within you know my political party and within City Hall, they all say to you, you don't realise how heavy the chain is. And this is just the practical side of it. Mm. Like the chain is 1787. It's 234 years old. And you're trying to prepare yourself mentally for the honour that the city are bestowing upon you. Mm. But when the chain actually lands on your shoulders, it was like a wave came over me. Because you're wearing the same chain that McCurtain and McSweeney wore. Mm. You know,
is it real gold?
It's real gold, yeah. Finbar has a joke.
Where is it now?
It's out in the car.
Oh, shit.
Finbar has a joke, like, what would you get for the chain? And he says, about 6 months above Ratmore Road.
Yeah. You know, I was drunk too, wouldn't it?
How heavy is it?
I think 3.5 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. It's uninsurable. A former Lord Mayor from up around this area, Tony Fitz, nearly caused an international incident a few years ago. Mm. There's a replica chain that you're supposed to take out of country when the Lord Mayor goes abroad and stuff like that. And Tony nearly caused an international incident. He landed over in China with the real one. He minded it though. Yeah. He minded it. But I suppose one of the things that you don't realise is the respect that the staff inside in City Hall and I suppose the whole community as a whole. No one calls you by your name. It's Lord Mayor. They stand up when you walk into a room, which is very strange from my point of view. Mm. And even I say, like, no, please call me Colm. Mm. No, it's just Lord Mayor, you know, but it's not respect for the individual, it's respect for the office because it's ingrained, I suppose, in civic society within Cork. We have a massive history. The office of the Lord Mayor goes back to 1900. Prior to that, they were called mayors, and prior to that, they were called provosts. And we can trace it back nearly 850 years.
Is it an old kind of British kind of tradition?
Well, the tradition of provost would have been, you know, medieval, that type of way, and then it progressed to mayor. The title of Lord Mayor was bestowed on Dublin, Belfast and Cork in 1900 when Queen Victoria came and she came to the Cork exhibition. And I'm sure we've all been down to Muckross House and we've been on the Jarvies and they say, you know, that's where Queen Victoria stayed here. Mm-hmm. On her way to Killarney, she bestowed the title of Lord Mayor on Cork, on Cork City, on Cork as a whole. Since then, they've been referred to as Lord Mayors. There's only three Lord Mayors in the island, Dublin, Belfast and Cork. There's only two in the Republic. Since then we've been referred to as Lord Mayors, and I suppose the first of the Republican Lord Mayors, and which would be Tomás McCurtain in 1920.
He was he was murdered while he was sitting Lord Mayor.
He was sitting Lord Mayor. He was shot in front of his children over a shop in Blackpool, the RAC.
Thomas Davis Street, was it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they blackened their face with coal so they couldn't be identified. And they shot him in front of his children, which was obviously disgraceful, you know. Mm-hmm. His successor, he died in office. His successor, Terence McSweeney, after becoming Lord Mayor, was soon arrested in an incident inside in City Hall. Terence was sent to Brixton Prison in London, where he went on hunger strike. I think it was like 76 or 75 days, and then he died of hunger, obviously.
And at the time, that was a huge international news, wasn't it?
Mm. It made headlines in India, in New York. And you have to realise, this is 1920 now. Isn't
no social media.
Instagram, Facebook. Yeah. I'm live on Facebook and you can see it in, you know, Darwin in Australia instantaneously. This was news that spread around the globe of an oppressive, I suppose, regime at the time with the government of Lloyd George in England, but we were effectively headlines all over the world. A second city of the second island within the empire, and that its Lord Mayor dying in a prison in Brixton. Gandhi and other inspirational people all around the world have even referenced the strength and, you know, the tenacity that former Lord Mayor Terence McSweeney showed.
I think Gandhi started doing the safe protests over in India after that. Because of listening to the story of them.
There was a great series on Nationwide, remember? Around the burning of Cork, they did a whole series on them. But if anybody's interested in this type of topic, that's where to go, because to be fair, Nationwide did give Cork a lot of profile there.
They're based out of the offices there.
Oh, is that why? They're very welcome up here,
they're
actually.
Very welcome, yeah, by all means.
But, how old are you, Cullum?
I'm 35.
Jeez, you must be one of the youngest, if not the youngest, Lord Mayor of Cork.
I would be one of the youngest, I suppose, in recent times. Yeah. The Taoiseach was younger than me when he was elected in 1982. And I actually had the honour of presenting, every 25 years, there's a picture of every Lord Mayor up on the wall in City Hall, just outside the Lord Mayor's office. And the current Lord Mayor is the one on top to the left at the entrance to the Lord Mayor's office. And then as other Lord Mayors are elected, you move down one and then you move over one. And it takes 25 years to get off the corridor and into the Lord Mayor's meeting room, where we have every single Lord Mayor from 1900 pictured on the wall. And Davy Mack, his family were actually in today. And
Davy Mack from Hollyhill?
Yeah.
And another stalwart of the area.
Stalwart. Yeah. I met his two sons, and I met his wife, the former Lady Mayoress, and I presented them with a picture of her husband and their father as Lord Mayor. So he came down from outside, and your colour when you're outside, and when you go inside, you go black and white. Mm. So I was joking, I'd probably end up down with a skirting board somewhere because we run out of space in the wall.
I remember when we were young, you know, where if you see Davy Mack over in Super Value, you're like, Davy, what story with a gaff? A great laugh.
This thing goes on.
Yeah, I know. Back in them days, you could get a gaff.
I know.
We won't talk about that because we'll keep it casual.
It's more difficult.
Yeah, but huge honour, though, the lineage you're coming from, you know, the history of it, and it must be a huge honour to wear the chain and represent your city like that.
It's, as I said, it's surreal. I was brought up in Ballincollig. I'm the fourth youngest of five boys. We came out of a three-bedroom semi in Rosewood in Ballincollig. My mother and my father, and they did our best, and we grew up in tough times, like everyone else.
Yeah.
I shared a box bedroom with my younger brother in bunk beds. I was in the top, and he was in the bottom, and I used to kill him. And the other three brothers were, And it was a happy home. It was, you know, we tore shreds off each other, as you can imagine, five boys.
Yeah.
The father and the mother was a referee then, like. but it's a massive, massive honour. My mother of God, she was down. She traipsed every store in Cork City and Ballincollig and Mahon Point coming up to the election. She bought about 12 or different outfits getting ready for it, you know. So, and my father, he was delighted, obviously. I would have been very close to my grandmother, Eileen McAuliffe. She had a furniture shop in Perry Street in Saint Town, next to Mary Tompkins.
Yeah.
Being from Ballincollig, she was from Mallow. Being from Ballincollig, I'd cycle in from Ballincollig every Saturday morning. I'd work the day in the shop and I'd go home to Mallow by night, and we'd come back up to the duck pond out in Blarney where my mother would pick me up and back to school Monday morning in Ballincollig. Mm. But she passed away on Christmas Eve in 2008. And I would have been very, very, very close to her growing up. Mm. She was almost a second mother. I spent every weekend of my youth. You wouldn't find me in Ballincollig at all. I was in Mallow, like, you know. And she had a big family down there. Her brothers and my cousins, or maybe my mother's first cousins, but we called each other cousins. There were so many of us there. And just have great times down there. And I'd spend all summer down there as well, fishing in the black water and stuff like that. But it was very sore for me to be elected as Lord Mayor and not have her there, you know, because she was a big, big part of my life. And I have two pictures on my desk in my office in City Hall. One is of my grandmother and the other one is a smaller one of Jack Lynch.
So. Yeah. Have you got a spiritual side? Yeah,
I do.
Do you believe that she's still energy, her energy is still around you? She's still with you in some way? Yeah.
100%. No, look, it's kind of, I suppose we were all brought up in holy Catholic Ireland and you know, we were brought to Mass and, you know, the prayers and that's it. But look, when she passed, it was obviously devastating for me. I took, you know, I'm probably not even, still not over it, if I'm to be honest with you. But I know, like, I talk to her every night before I go to bed. I say my little prayers getting into bed.
Yeah.
And I say, I'm 35 years of age and you may laugh at me.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, yeah. I say my little prayer getting into bed and I say goodnight to her every night.
There's no shame in having someone as your higher power to get you through the tough times in life. Like all the people, everybody I know in some form of recovery from some addiction, they all have a higher power. It may be a god, it may be a family member that passed on. It could be anything at all, but it's very important just to believe in something else, you know, pulling the strings that. Because if you try to do everything on your own will, which is what we do in addiction, you'll constantly
run yourself ragged, like, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But there's no harm, like, even for people that haven't got addictions, to have some sort of spiritual side, not just praying or meditating or anything like that, but just a belief that, you know, there's certain, you know, if I'm a good person, good things will happen for me. That's in the sense, like, if I put good energy out there, I get good things to come back. That's kind of spirituality too.
It is.
Yeah.
But when you were, how long you Lord Mayor when we elected? In June, is it?
June, yeah.
And in July.
10 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago.
Yeah, so you're in this infancy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's COVID. I felt sorry for Joe Kavanagh.
I did too.
The previous Lord Mayor, because the Lord Mayor previous to that was Mick Finn, whom I worked with in the Corky.
Dr. John. And Mick prior.
Sheehan. And then Mick, but whatever about John, but Mick looked like he had a fucking ball, you know. He had the Liam Miller thing. He had, you know, he did a lot of stuff. He was out and about,
he
you know.
Was, he was.
Yeah. But when
he made in office.
Yeah.
He was a very good Lord Mayor as well.
Yeah.
He represented the city very, very well.
Yeah. And a lovely man as well.
Oh, Mick salt of the earth.
But he looked like, you know, when you look at, he's like, he published like a book, you know.
That's right.
Photographs of his term, but Jesus Christ, he's done so. But when I looked at kind of Joe Kavanagh's time there, lockdown, and, you know, a big part of being a Lord Mayor is going around and giving school days off and shaking people's hands and hugging more ladies and kissing babies, all this stuff. Do you think that, are you hopeful that you'll get a bit of that towards the second half of the term?
Well, I suppose, like, I spoke with Joe about a week before I came into office. I went in and I visited him. He was still in office as Lord Mayor. And City Hall was almost abandoned. It was like a ghost town. There was no one there. And Joe was in the office and he called me and made a cup of coffee and I was chatting to him. And he goes, you know, you had a tough year. Like, he said, call him by. He goes, any morning you can wake up and have the chain of McSweeney and McCurtain hanging over your shoulders is a good day. So, and that really struck me. Yeah, he had COVID. he couldn't go do the traditional schools as the Lord Mayor does. He couldn't travel abroad. He didn't have as much engagements. But Jesus, I thought he represented us so well. We had a centenary of the burning of Cork. And it was a virtual thing. It was online. But he was there with the Taoiseach and with the former Lady Mayor, Stephanie, his wife as well. And I thought the sense of grace and dignity the two of them brought in tough times.
And you know, when you're up, you know, that role.
So, to Joe, I will say this, fair play, you know.
Yeah.
Big shoes to fill. He mightn't have done it in a traditional manner, but I'm acutely aware of the service he gave to the office before me. It's a different party, but we won't hold that against him.
Yeah.
But, like, he brought a sense of dignity to the role that no one can ever take away from him.
Yeah.
And he actually holds two records. He chaired the first ever online council meeting of Cork City Council. Never again to be broken. So he's in the record books for that. And he visited every single school in Cork City virtually in 30 minutes.
That's a good one.
That's never been done before.
That's nearly Santa Claus time.
Yeah.
But do you know, when you look at the Roll of Honour or the Hall of Fame of the Lord Mayors with them photos, and after 25 years, you don't look back and look at Davy Mack and say, I wonder what did he do in his year, or look at, it's irrelevant. You're still a part of history, isn't it? And it doesn't really matter. You're still there, like, you know.
Like 101 years this year of Republican Lord Mayors. And when I say Republican, I mean Lord Mayors that have declared allegiance to Dáil Éireann.
Mm-hmm.
We have 121st year of the Lord Mayor as an institution itself since 1900. But, you know, some people have been Lord Mayor twice. But, like, you're in a very select group of individuals going through history. And I know it's a year. It changes every year. But you're the first citizen of Cork. You're representing every citizen. You're trying to do your best for them. You're doing it for the right reasons. I don't believe anyone has ever gone into the office of Lord Mayor with self-promotion or, selfishness about them. Like, I believe that everyone that has gone before me and hopefully everyone that comes after me will be doing it for the right reasons. I feel I'm doing it for the right reasons. But it's a massive, massive honour. We have a long history here in Cork and we're very, very proud of it. And we're also, I'm led to believe, this, you might check this, Stewards Inquiry, but I'm led to believe we're the only office of Lord Mayor that receives a gift of a car.
Oh, yeah.
From Ford's, CAB.
Yeah, the Vignale.
The Ford Vignale. Yeah. Kilvamonde or Vignale. Yeah. What an absolute beautiful car. Like. And 212C1. They gift that to the city. They don't charge us a penny for it. And the registration is reserved. So, the one.
Yeah.
You know?
Number one citizen.
What happens then afterwards?
They don't have
that
in Dublin. They don't have it in Belfast.
Who gets the car then afterwards?
It goes back to CAB.
And they sell it.
Any Joe Soap can buy it. I think the Lord Mayor, the previous Lord, gets first refusal.
Yeah.
And the last one went back with a price tag of 39,000 on it, I think.
You're not sticking it up in Dundee after 6 months.
No. Hey, Finny, you'd have a heart attack. It was actually something very funny happened. I was in office about, I'd say, 3 or 4 days. And Finbar picked me up and we were coming in the South Link and we came down by the Kinsale Road roundabout and we pulled up there, you know, but just the traffic lights just after the roundabout. And I was in the two, at the time, believe it or not, I know I'm only in 11, 12 weeks, I'm in my second car because I took over in June and it changes in July. So I was in the 211C1. And up alongside us pulls the 192C1. Oh, so I just imagine, like, you know, there's a fella behind the two cars now, like, saying, which one's the Lord Mayor?
If you're ever looking to get a wash, no, or a valid, bring it down to the Marina Commercial Park and we'll give you a free one.
Starting a car wash down there.
Yeah. We started a car wash and valeting company down there a while back.
Fair play.
And we're just, it's baby business. It's really just getting off the floor. My wife Nicole she's packed in her job and she's down there now working full time.
I was told you're hiring people that are in recovery.
Well, I do that on both sides. I have a construction company as well, property maintenance, and everybody is in recovery. Everybody that works That's with right. me is in recovery, and it just works well. it works well because we can hop off each other. If one is having a bad day, we can talk about it. You know, there's no shyness about it. We talk about how we're getting on if something's after bothering us. And there's another thing I'm going to integrate into it as well is where we kind of have a half day on a Friday and we talk about the week, where we can talk about any kind of argument or any shit that went on during the week. We can sit down and sort it out before we hit a weekend and come back on a Monday and the resentment is still in the head. So that's another thing. And that's the construction. But the car wash below is we're just kind of integrating people back into the work area. Some people have, you know, they've had difficult times, you know, and they just want to get back into work and an opportunity to work again. You know,
that's therapy in itself as well. Yeah. It's not easy.
It's tough kind of trying to manage everything at the moment. The two of us, myself and Nicole, is really tough. And there's so much change in our lives at the moment that it's actually very stressful. We had no holiday this year. We have a mobile home down in Valentia Island and we haven't even got an opportunity to go down there because we're so busy. We feel like the kids are being neglected, you know, because there's so much change in it. We're new to the whole lot of it, but it'll be fine. Right. We'll manage it. And once it starts getting a little bit busy below in the marina, now we're based in the marina commercial park.
What we'll do so is we'll go down in the car and we'll get the car washed.
That would be absolutely great and it'll be free.
No, it'll
be free.
The office of the Lord Mayor will pay.
Well, we'll invite City Hall, so. Thank you very much.
Well done, thanks. For a play, and well aware with it.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Speaking about recovery, when you weren't in office long, I met you at the launch of the Dash Bus, which is a mobile sexual screening unit. And that day there was an article in the Examiner, you did an interview where you spoke about your brother who was in recovery from heroin addiction and is doing pretty well today. When I read that, I thought it was great that the first citizen of the city was so open about a topic like this that is taboo. Drug use in and of itself is taboo. But heroin use is highly stigmatized. So for the first citizen in the city to try and bring the topic out into the open, I thought it was great. I was thinking like, this is such a good ally to have for something that we advocate for, obviously.
Of course.
Can you tell us a little bit about that interview? What kind of, why you did it, or and maybe how your brother was, how it affected the family and how he's doing today?
You touched on stigma there. Mm. And if you go back through history, homosexuality was stigmatised. Mm. Racism was stigmatised.
Mental health as well.
Mental health was stigmatised. All of these things are now accepted to be an issue. And some of them are cultural, some of them are society, and some of them are you know, taboo, as you said now, in relation to heroin within the drugs trade and within drug taking. It's like, you know, premiership football as opposed to a fella smoking a bit of weed.
Exactly.
It's up here, you know. But just because something is stigmatised doesn't mean that is the correct approach to it. That's my personal belief. I'm a very open-minded person. I believe that, you know, everything is some form of a personal choice to start with, but you can be dragged down fairly quickly. In my brother's case, he started off with the soft drugs, the weeds and stuff like that, and then moved on to, he grew up kind of before me, and it was back before we had social media and stuff like that. Yeah. He was taking ecstasy, he was taking speed, he was drinking, he was taking coke, and it led to heroin. Mm. I think first smoking it and then injecting.
Mm.
And I suppose when I was growing up, Don immediately preceded me.
Is he a little bit older than you?
Don's 4 years older than me.
Yeah.
And he was my big brother.
Yeah.
And when we were growing up, we were very close. And it was always, if I had a problem, I got to Don.
Mm.
But it got to a stage where he was obviously using. We were unaware of it as a family. So we never experienced drug use before as a family. And he became less and less every day. It wasn't Don you were talking to.
Yeah.
It was someone else. And then money started going missing, and he was fighting, and then he started getting in trouble with the law. Mm. And it was just like a downward spiral, you know. And we couldn't, well, my mother and father especially, couldn't understand what the heck was going on. Like, you know, there's five of us there. The two boys at the top are all right. Two boys at the bottom. And the fella in the middle is going bananas. So, like, it's obviously they started realising there's drugs. And then he started to get involved in petty crime. He started robbing, he started stealing. He fell in with the wrong crowd. Ran away from home. All the usual traits you see with some fella dealing in an addiction. And then in his late teens, early 20s, he broke down. He came home and he broke down. And it transpired that he'd been sexually molested by a teacher in primary school, in fourth class, which he since subsequently brought a case against that teacher, and that teacher has been convicted. And I hope you'd appreciate it. I won't name
of course
him. Because it just angers me personally, not for anything like that.
Doesn't matter. He's not don't give
it
up. He's
not important, you know.
But you know, you said earlier on that you believe that maybe there's a certain amount of it is choice, and that is true. But you know, when you've been through a trauma like that, choice to use drugs might be a choice to use drugs just to experiment, but the choice to go into addiction is not.
But you see, 100%, and that's what I was trying to allude to. Don, you know, tore out and, you know, rebelled against authority after that. No, get their head around it, like, why, do you know why, like? He was obviously damaged, and he was trying to hide it, and then he started using, you know, narcotics and, you know, drugs, and it was a choice at the start, but maybe to ease the pain. And then, as you said, you don't have a choice. Once it gets a hold of you, whether you are, you know, from the upper echelons of society or an average Joe Soap, it does not, you know, there's no distinction with drugs in relation to class. There's not, the same way there's no distinction, COVID doesn't care whether, you know, it's going to go after everyone.
If it gets a hold of you.
It gets a hold of you. And that's what happened to Don. And, Jesus, there was a lot of false dawns. There was a lot of, I'm sick. I realise I'm sick. I want to get a home. I want to get help. And, you know, he had two children, two beautiful children, my niece and my nephew, with a previous partner. And he's no longer with her. Obviously, they went their separate ways. Drugs and alcohol.
Collateral damage.
It's collateral damage, you know. And two beautiful children. One of them is my goddaughter. I'm very, very fond of her. If she's listening to this TikTok or TikTok, if she's listening to this podcast, she's mad for TikTok. She want to calm down enough.
We're too old for TikTok.
I think I was the first Lord Mayor to do a TikTok, but anyway, we'll get back to that. But and then, like, I had kids. Seamus. Kids, Patrick had kids, Michael had kids, Don had kids, and we were all trying to do the best for our family. And then Don was just like awash, lost at sea, his ship lost at sea. And as you said, like collateral damage. He's now since clean. He's obviously in he says every day is a battle. He's still in treatment, but mentally and physically. He met a new girl, he has a new child. He's opening up a new business, in the process of opening it up. He started a college course recently. Like, we were speaking before we came on there, and like, you asked me what triggered it to do it as a public rep. I suppose it's a taboo subject for people for so many years. And I felt I was coming into City Hall, and my brother, Don, was down in Mallow, and he took a picture of a shop front, an empty shop unit, and he just said, I'm going to take a chance. And at that time, I'm even getting emotional now. Like, I nearly welled up inside the back of the car.
How far he's after coming, like,
just to see it. Like, and I've seen Don with a needle in his arm and foam coming out of his mouth, and we rushing him to the hospital. And to go from that to see him with his head clear, getting actively involved in his two children's lives that he unfortunately neglected, and he has a great relationship with him now, and it's great to see him blossoming. And a new child then as well on top of that. And to see him saying he's going to take a chance at, he's going to have antique furniture or second-hand furniture or whatever you call it, but I couldn't care if he was selling biscuits as long as he's something to focus on, you know? And I welled up in the back of the car, and then Finbar looked back at me, all right, Lord Mayor, I'm grand. And I just kind of put a post on Facebook about addiction, and Owen English, an examiner, rang me, and he goes, you know, it's kind of cryptic in what you said there. And I goes, no, it's to do with my brother. And I told Owen my story. And Owen, in fairness, Owen, you know, he it's very, I suppose, delicate for the family.
Yeah.
And as you said, like a taboo subject, and it was this perception that, you know, it's a dirty secret that families have and it should be hidden away and stigmatized. And Donna, is nothing to be ashamed of.
How did you feel after the story went out? Did you feel, like, it's very hard to understand how you're going to be received by the public for something like that, particularly when you're in politics and you've such a high position within the City Hall and stuff. I don't know, we in the City Hall at that stage, but
we lost me out that time, only a couple of weeks.
That's a massive step. That is a brave step.
Look,
you know, myself and James would not.
Not when you put your story out there, you have to accept that it's sometimes it's not all going to be positive.
You're going to get people, like, even people maybe listening to this podcast now, and they're saying, oh, look at him, and he's doing this and he's doing that. You're going to get people, begrudgers. It's in all walks of life. No one's going to like you 100%. You know, particularly in my game as a politician, there's no one going to like you 100%. You know, whether it be, you know, political aspirations or personality or something, whatever it may be. But, like, I was worried initially when it was going to go out. I spoke with Don, I spoke with the family. I said, look, Owen wants to do this in the Examiner. I'm willing to tell him, is it okay? Like, I didn't just dive right in and say, here's my story.
Yeah.
And, by the way, tell the family. Like,
I know, yeah.
You know, over a cup of tea, like, you know, oh, by the way, Mom. And by the way, Don, but it was, I rang him and I said, look, is it all right if I tell your story? And he said, yeah, 100%. 100%. So I knew then, with Don's blessing, that I felt a bit confident to tell our story. And one thing, like I said at the end of it to Owen, was that as Lord Mayor, one of my themes of my morality, I want to help people in recovery and help people in addiction. And, you know, some people may realise that, you know, that there's no hope out there. There is. There's always someone to talk to. And the Office of the Lord Mayor, under my stewardship, there's an open door policy there. If someone has a problem, they can knock on my door and I will help them. But to answer your question, how did I feel? I felt worried. But the reception I got, and the reception we got as a family, the emails the office received in relation to people seeking help, and just the whole broad reception of it across society. Like, I was on News Talk, I was on local radio stations, I was in the Examiner, I was in the Independent, and the broad reception of people. Like, I got emails from people above in Sligo, above in Dublin. I got one fellow from Boston. You know, there was, you know, saying thank you for your story, because there's so many people struggling. And Don's journey, he may be at the tail end of it, but he's never going to finish it.
It's kind of continuous thing.
It's continuous.
I'll tell you that.
And people could be starting out. I don't have a problem. Go on away. Don't look at me. I'm in the middle. Okay, I might have a problem, or I'm at the end, or I'm at the end of the beginning, and I need help. But there is avenues, and sure, look, you know better than anyone else. But there's avenues there, like, you know.
When you did that interview, and you know, you said there you were on News Talk and the Independent, the Examiner, and that. Well, you're on the turnaround now, so you've peaked.
Oh, I'm 100%. It's all downhill from here.
But you know,
it's all downhill from here.
When you went to the Examiner and the other media with the story, in that moment, right, you've reached out to so many families affected by this issue, and the families that would see the Lord Mayor, politics in general, as kind of uppity or something that would be detached from my normal. All of a sudden, you make it very relatable. You know, like, politics, politicians are people from our areas, 100%. With families like us, with issues like us too, you know.
Which collects us.
I know, yeah. But sometimes politicians can feel, or can become detached, I suppose. So
there is an element to that, right? But I suppose this goes back to my grandmother, when I was working behind the shop counter in Perry Street. And we dealt with all walks of life there, all walks of life. And my grandmother used to have said, she said, be careful, you know, no matter how far you rise, it goes mind everyone on the way up, because you don't know who you're going to meet on the way down.
That's the truth.
It's as simple as that. So I couldn't care whether you were a multi-billionaire or you were, you know, an average Joe Soap inside the road. We're all the same.
Yeah.
We are all the same.
Would you like to leave some form of legacy behind you as being Lord Mayor in terms of maybe doing something for the city, maybe like towards the treatment centres are. Do you think we've enough? Do you think we've enough?
I don't think we've enough, to be honest with you. And I'm on the record, and I'll say it here again, I think we need supervised injection centres.
Definitely, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I had a story and an email from a lad in there. He watched his son die in the COH after a dirty needle, and he was caught inside in the old North Main Shopping Street, or shopping centre, not Main Street. We need him. We need. My friend
died in there too.
Yeah,
Vincent.
Yeah,
that's desperate. Like,
no, it's sad. Like,
and then I had the opposite side of that. Then going, oh, why should we pay for supervised injection centres? Mm-hmm. Tell that to the man who buried his son.
But see,
do you know what I mean?
The people that say that think that the people that are using these injection centres want to be using them because they have nothing better to be doing. That's not the reality at all. The reality is these people are suffering in some form or some way if they're using heroin, and they can't see a way out. You know, they just cannot see a way out.
Sickness.
Because the heroin is blocking out whatever trauma or whatever experience they don't want to.
Like, if you have a headache, you take a paracetamol.
Exactly, yeah.
Simple as.
Yeah. And if you have diabetes, you need to go to the chemist for insulin. But if you have heroin addiction, does it, or we'd want no methadone being dispensed in my pharmacy.
Exactly.
That's like denying a diabetic insulin. Another thing I have an issue with is, I understand drug-related litter, right, is a big issue for certain areas. But then when proposals, I remember City Council, they put, and I want name areas now,
okay,
right, because I know it's sensitive for people. But if there's an issue in the area and City Council put in drug needle stick bins and stuff like that, then residents complain about the bins. It's like, we can't just make it vanish. You have to address it, you know? You can't, like, we don't want to damage drugs or don't to the city, but we also don't want to be part of any solution. We have to be solution-focused. Like,
we, as a society, need to start having an adult conversation about addiction. Not just heroin or narcotics, but gambling, alcoholism. We need to start having a mature conversation and how we are going to deal with it as a society. Because if we are to expect an individual who's suffering from addiction to come to an institution for help, and we expect them to fix themselves, then we need to, as a society, to step up to the mark and to meet them halfway. Supervised injection centres, I am all for. And I know other members of council are as well. I'm not going to name anyone here now. But I know for a fact that is the case. You said they don't want bins in their area. Certain people don't. But you remember the toilets in Grand Parade? They had to be shut down because they were being used as, I suppose, covered injection for individuals who were injecting. But we now have no toilets. And then what was done? Oh, we'll take the toilets out of there. Yeah. So you're sweeping the problem under the rug and we're taking away. And where does that do? They're down a side alley. And we're back to the, you know, as you said, your friend who passed away and that individual who passed away in North Main Street Shopping Centre. And you're hiding it. And it is this, I suppose, notion of out of sight, out of mind. That's wrong. I think it's wrong, 100%. Like, we need to start having an adult conversation about how we're going to deal with this epidemic, because that's what it is.
And it's not like, it's not soft on drugs policy either. What you're trying to do is, you're trying to keep somebody alive long enough so they can turn around and change. And the supervised injection facility, it's not like, oh, come on in here and get stoned.
Exactly.
It's, we'll provide you with safe works. If you overdose, we'll make sure you don't die. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll provide naloxone or whatever. But also, we'll have key workers on site. We'll signpost the different, we'll let you know where the help is. And when you're ready, it'll be there for you. We're just trying to keep people alive. Like my friend that died, maybe you didn't come across your brother with the needle and the phone. What would have happened to him? He'd have been dead.
We did.
What we're trying to do is make sure people don't die, and eventually your brother can open up a shop. Do you know, me and Timmy can go to college, start podcasts and help others. Gillian can become a teacher. Do you know, people have loads of potential, but if they die, all the potential dies with them. We just want to keep them alive that little bit.
And the best stories in the graveyard, isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
You know, you're 100% right.
Yeah.
And we need to incentivize these people and help these people to get back. They've fallen in hard times. And my dad used to say to me, Colin, what you do when you fall? You pick yourself up.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. And just because they're dealing with a narcotics that happens to be illegal, it's taboo. And that's all wrong. Like, you look at Portugal.
Yeah.
They've decriminalised it. And they've tax certain elements of it, which is good for the exchequer, but that's not what it's about. But their crime rates have plummeted on account of it.
And drug-related deaths.
On HIV, on organised criminality.
Yeah.
Because you're taking, like, look, organised criminality.
In the courts.
Imagine you take their product off them in the morning.
Mm.
What are they going to do? Do you know, you're solving a lot. I think that as a society, we need to look at helping individuals. But at long term, I think, you know, Ireland needs to follow suit and decriminalise certain elements of narcotics.
You need to stop looking at
it. The same as Portugal. Yeah. And stop looking at it as a criminal problem and start looking at it as a medical problem, which is what Portugal has done.
Yeah. Yeah.
They need to stop looking as a problem, and looking for a solution. Yeah. The solution will solve the problem. As long as you keep thinking that there's a problem there, like, people are going to keep taking drugs because they need to deal with whatever's going on for them. Why not bring something in where we have a form of solution where, like Portugal, it's a great example, you know, and
like people think drugs are a modern incarnation or invention. They're not. Mm. The human race has been taking drugs since men could walk.
Yeah.
Mm. You go back to society, the opium dens in England in the 1800s. Yeah. It's there.
Yeah. Drugs haven't been illegal all that long either. No. In relative to history, you know what I mean? Yeah. The last 100 years, really, and it's all ideology and politically motivated, and a lot of the policies that work in other jurisdictions, we don't have them here, snap, for a want of scientific evidence. It's a lot of it is ideology and moralistically based.
And it isn't just one size fits all. Obviously, what Portugal did was pioneering, but we would have to tailor it to our society and our needs. Mm-hmm. I'm not just saying pick up their idea and throw it over here.
But I think we're probably getting there. Like, we have this two strikes rules, you know, where you have decriminalisation for the first two offences, but it's very much down to the discretion of the judge. I know Ireland Kelleher and Cork Air is doing a pilot scheme on that, which is being researched at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of need it, like decriminalisation kind of for all drug deal. Because would you consider your brother a criminal?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't, like?
But I can guarantee you there's people out in society that would.
And I wouldn't class myself as
I wouldn't class any either two of you.
Because when you're
individuals.
When you take the drugs out of the equation, there'd never again be a crime committed.
You know, I have to laugh at that. Like, do you often hear a fella there, like, you know, he's mad for the drink.
Yeah.
You know, he's an awful man after drink. Yeah, he's grand, but once he gets a drink in him, he's an awful man.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
Yeah, exactly.
And drink is a drug as well, whether we like to believe it or not. Yeah. It is.
It's just a taxable.
He's an awful man after drink. Oh, what he says, you know, he'd never say that sober. Mm-hmm. You have to take that logic and apply it to narcotics.
Yeah.
It's the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
And the vetting, Garda vetting as well, in terms of, like, yeah, he might have done that stuff when he was using drugs, but he wouldn't dream of doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the fellow who's murder and the drink, but his own fellow when he's sober. It's the same thing, and it's a good point. But what was I going to say to you before we finish up? Have you anything interesting coming up? Any interesting engagements or visits? Are you starting to travel around more?
We do. This Saturday, I will have the honour of accompanying the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence on board the Ellie Samuel Beckett from Ha Boland up to Kennedy Quay. And there's another two or three naval vessels in tow to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the naval service in Ireland. And we're holding a civic reception in City Hall. And I believe I'm going for lunch on board the Beckett then as well.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it because my young fella's coming with me.
I love it.
And we're going to go from Hall Boland right up past Blackrock Castle, right up the old Port of Cork, past your car wash, onto Kennedy Quay, and it's something I'm looking forward to, and I know the young fellas as well, and Finbar's been winding me up all week, because as Lord Mayor, you're also Admiral of the Port of Cork.
Oh.
It's an old tradition that goes back to 1700s, and you actually get an Admiral's hat, like Lord Ensign. And there's the traditional throwing of the dart, which takes place in October. You go out in a naval ship, and you go out as far as Roach's Point, and you throw the dart, and wherever the dart lands is the boundary of the domain of the Lord Mayor of Cork. It's just a traditional thing there. But Finney's winding me up all week. He says, Lord Mayor, you'll have to wear the hat coming up the harbour, and you'll have to wear the robes as well. And like, see, I was there, no, you're winding me up. Like saying, no, he kept on nodding, nodding. And I went into Nicola in the office today, and she goes, you must be fucking joking.
That's gas, isn't it?
So there'll be no hat, there'll be no robe, you'd have the chain and the young fella, and I'm looking forward to that. We are opening up again. COVID has been detrimental on all walks of society, mental health and civic society and social society and everything. We are opening up again. The civic reception hall in City Hall is obviously COVID limited with COVID numbers and social distancing and all that, but I'm very optimistic for the future on the 22nd of October.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call it Freedom Day like they did in England, going mad and saying weird and jumping around. it'll be the social requirement or the legal requirement for social distancing will be scrapped. The wearing of masks in certain settings outdoors and even indoors will be scrapped. I was talking to one fella and he goes, what are you looking forward to? He goes, taking the stool and putting it back up against the bar and sitting at the bar. That's such a big part of people's lives. Live entertainment, which is coming back soon now, and they've been detrimentally hit. But look, I know people will say, look, you've anti-vaxxers and you've anti-conspiracy COVID. You've all that, right? I don't know what's right. I'm not a scientist, but I do know one thing. It's been a crap 2.5 years, two years, and we want to get out of it. Yeah. So we're going the right direction. We may have made mistakes down through along the path. We've had false dawns, but this was a learning curve for everyone.
Yeah,
everyone on the planet, whether we like it or not. I would be optimistic, as a society, we can move forward. And in relation to trips, I had a meeting with the chief head of international relations in the French Embassy today in City Hall, and we're looking at possibly going to Rennes in May. Cork is twinned with Rennes in Brittany and Northern France, and now France is our closest EU neighbour.
That's right.
Since the United Kingdom have left, we're looking to open up trade routes and commerce between us, ourselves, and France, which can be very, very beneficial.
A lot to look forward to.
A lot to look forward to. I got a shock. I get the diary every Sunday night. Nicola's, I have to hand it to her. Without Nicola, there would be no Lord.
And she's been great to liaise with as well.
She's just a pleasure. And it's literally, she hands you your diary and it's the gospel according to Nicola. But I have to hand it to Finbar as well. There isn't a back alley or a boring that man doesn't know. We've sat and having the car, and I don't think he's turned it on once. What do you want that for? Not a bother to him.
Finbar been the driver for all the Lord Mayors?
I think I'm his 11th Lord Mayor. He's hilarious. Like, you could be driving. Like, we went down for the inspection of the fleet of the RCYC last Saturday, down in Harboland as well. We were on the way down, next thing, and he's just tapping the phone on the screen in the car. Next thing, he pulls up some Commodore and Harboland base. All right, Finny, bye. What's the story? He knows everyone.
Yeah.
He knows everyone, no matter where you're going. We went to the National Day of Commemoration we drove up there, and it was in Collins' Barracks in Dublin. And we pulled up anyway, and there was a soldier. She was directing us down to a car park. And I'm here with the Lord Mayor of Cork. And I said, all right, I was parked down there. And Finney was like, no, this isn't right now, Lord Mayor. We'll get you up next to the President in the Taoiseach 2 minutes now. So he makes a phone call. And next thing, everyone was parking in the lower car park. Then all of a sudden, two lads come out of nowhere, barriers open up, straight up like that. And you get up there and, all right, Finbar, what's the story? He knows everyone.
Finbar more famous than you.
Finbar more famous than me.
He might be the Lord Mayor of Cork someday.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He's the eternal Lord Mayor. Yeah. He's a gentleman. He's absolutely fair play, Finbar. He's a pleasure to go to work with every morning. Yeah.
Fair play.
Look, enjoy the rest of your time. Yeah. And it was an honour to speak to you. And
we'll definitely look out for you, because you're somebody now that has some form of authority that knows what it's like to have. But it's a good thing that there's somebody like yourself knows what it's like to live with somebody caught up in addiction and everything else in prison and whatever else. It's great.
I think that's brilliant. And thanks for having me on. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I know I spoke to you at the Dash Bus, and we were kind of to win and throwing, and Nicola was mentioning it and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to it all day. The long day, I started early this morning.
Same with ourselves.
But I've been really looking forward to it all day, and it was an absolute pleasure. Anything I can do in my capacity as Lord Mayor, lads, give me a shout. I'll always be at the end of the phone or contact Nicola. When things ease up, I'd like to get the two of you into the chamber. And I don't have to be involved in it because you've all heard my story now, and that's it, you'll do. But I want ye to host a live podcast from the chamber in City Hall.
That would be the honour of our lives, believe me.
You do that for me, lads?
Yeah.
That would be absolutely great.
Excellent. Mm. Yeah. We'll do it before I leave.
Thank you.
That's the job. I look forward to that.
Excellent.
Thanks a million.
Thanks.
And don't forget to bring the car down to the car wash.
I've been telling you on my word.
September is International Recovery Month.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our first podcast in honour of International Recovery Month. But we're going to do a whole series of them over the month of September, just focused on recovery. So you're the first. So thanks for coming on and giving the perspective of a family member, because you speak on behalf of all families affected by addiction, which happens all over Cork City and County. So thanks a million.
James,
thank you very much.
And thanks, Gillian. You did a great job.
Mighty.
See you later.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.